All right, welcome in everyone to the deep dive. We're tackling a pretty heavy case today. It's the Anderson v. Douglas case out of the Arkansas Supreme Court. And, well, it deals with the termination of parental rights, which is always just such a complex and sensitive area of the law, isn't it?
It really is. You know, when you're talking about severing the legal bonds between a parent and a child, the stakes are incredibly high. And, you know, the court has to strike a delicate balance. On the one hand, you have the fundamental rights of parents, which are deeply ingrained in our legal system. And then on the other hand, you have the paramount need to protect a child's well-being.
Yeah, exactly. And the source material we're looking at today, it kind of highlights how fraught this whole process can be. We've got these excerpts from, it's like a fictional podcast. It's called Case Brief, and they're sort of walking us through this Anderson v. Douglas case. They break it down really well. They've got, you know, the background, the facts of the case, the procedural history, the specific issues the court had to decide, and then even like a full legal brief analyzing the whole thing.
It's actually a really good way to unpack a case like this. It gives us a framework to really get into the legal nuts and bolts, and then also to kind of step back and consider the broader implications, like what are the policy considerations behind these laws? What are the ethical dilemmas that judges and lawyers have to wrestle with?
Right, right. And I think, you know, for our listeners, especially those who might be interested in family law, this deep dive is going to be super insightful. We're going to see how the courts apply these incredibly tough legal standards, you know, particularly that clear and convincing evidence standard, which is required in cases like this where you're talking about terminating parental rights. We'll also see how important it is for everyone involved to follow the right procedures, you know, making sure all the legal arguments are properly presented and preserved.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely crucial. Procedural errors can have a huge impact on a case, and we'll definitely see that play out here.
Okay, so let's start with the basics. Can you give us a little bit of background on Mary Douglas Anderson and her daughter, Tiffany Douglas, and the circumstances that led to this whole case?
Sure. So the story starts back in May of 1990 with Mary Douglas Anderson and her 10-month-old daughter, Tiffany. Sadly, Tiffany was hospitalized with some pretty severe bruising.
Oh, that's just awful. And I'm assuming those injuries weren't accidental.
Sadly, no. It turned out that the injuries were inflicted by Tiffany's stepfather, a man named John Bradley Anderson, who later admitted guilt and was convicted of physical abuse. As a result of this really terrible situation, the Department of Human Services, which we'll call DHS from now on, stepped in and took custody of Tiffany. I mean, you know, they needed to get her to a safe place.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what happened after DHS took custody? Did they just, you know, try to permanently remove Tiffany from the home right away?
Not exactly. In September of 1990, DHS actually put together a case plan for Mary.
Oh, a case plan. So like a roadmap for her to potentially get Tiffany back.
Exactly. It laid out specific steps that Mary needed to take to show that she could provide a safe and stable environment for Tiffany so that, you know, eventually they could be reunited. Things like counseling, parenting classes, and maintaining regular visits with Tiffany. All these were meant to help Mary address any issues and ultimately get back on track as a parent.
It sounds like things didn't exactly go according to plan. Did Mary follow through on those requirements?
Well, that's where things start to get complicated. Unfortunately, Mary didn't fully comply with the case plan. She ended up discontinuing both the counseling sessions and the parenting classes.
Oh, so she kind of just stopped going.
Yeah, and on top of that, her visits with Tiffany became very sporadic and inconsistent. It's like she was struggling to maintain that connection with her daughter, you know, which the court obviously would have seen as a big red flag.
Right. You can see how that would raise serious concerns. So then what happened? I mean, what did the court do when Mary wasn't really engaging with the case plan?
So in March of 1991, the Chancery Court held a hearing. Now, Chancery Courts in Arkansas, just for those who may not be familiar, they handle a lot of family law matters, including things like custody disputes.
Okay, got it. So what was the outcome of that hearing?
Well, based on the evidence and testimony presented up to that point, the court determined that, you know, it wasn't in Tiffany's best interest to return to her mother's care. Reunification wasn't deemed appropriate at that time.
So after that finding, what did DHS do?
Well, unfortunately, because the situation wasn't improving, on May 31st, 1991, DHS filed a petition to terminate Mary's parental rights.
Wow. That's, I mean, that's a huge step. It's a really drastic measure.
Absolutely. It basically means that legally the parent-child relationship is severed. It's a permanent decision that has lasting repercussions for everyone involved.
So what happened next? Did the case go to trial?
Yeah, it did. The trial was held in the Chancery Court on September 23, 1991. Both sides presented their evidence and arguments, and the court ultimately decided to terminate Mary's parental rights. And, you know, this is really important. The court's decision was based on what they determined to be clear and convincing evidence.
Okay, so let's pause there for a second, because you mentioned clear and convincing evidence. Now, for those of us who aren't lawyers, can you explain what that means? I mean, how is it different from other legal standards of proof?
Sure. So clear and convincing evidence, it's a standard of proof used in lots of civil cases, particularly those involving really important rights, like parental rights. It's kind of in the middle. You've got preponderance of the evidence at the lower end, which basically means, you know, more likely than not. And then you have beyond a reasonable doubt at the higher end, which is used in criminal cases. So clear and convincing evidence is somewhere in between. It basically means that the court has to be persuaded that the facts are highly likely to be true.
Got it. So it's a pretty high bar.
It is. It's significantly higher than just proving something is more likely than not. It really underscores the seriousness of terminating someone's parental rights.
Okay, so the Chancery Court made this decision based on clear and convincing evidence.
Mm-hmm.
What happened next?
Well, as you might expect, Mary appealed the decision to the Arkansas Supreme Court.
Okay. And what were the main legal issues that the Supreme Court had to grapple with on appeal?
There were two main issues. First, Mary's lawyers argued that the Chancery Court's decision was clearly erroneous.
Hmm. So basically claiming that the lower court got it wrong.
Exactly. They were asking the Supreme Court to take another look at the evidence and see if the Chancery Court had correctly applied the law to the facts as they found them.
Right. And what was the second issue on appeal?
Well, Mary also brought up a constitutional challenge. She argued that the Arkansas statute that deals with the termination of parental rights, that's Arkansas Code Annotated Section 9-27341, was unconstitutionally vague and violated her due process rights.
Okay, so those are some pretty big legal questions. What did the Arkansas Supreme Court ultimately decide?
Well, in the end, the Arkansas Supreme Court upheld the Chancery Court's decision. They affirmed the termination of Mary's parental rights.
Wow, so they agreed with the lower court. And what were the key factors in their reasoning? What specifically led them to that decision?
All right, so the reasoning was based on several key points. First, they pointed out that Tiffany had been living outside of her mother's care for over a year at that point. You know, they considered that length of separation significant.
Right, and I imagine that tied into the second point, which was about Mary's efforts to remedy the situation.
Exactly. The Supreme Court, they agreed with the lower court's finding that Mary hadn't done enough to address the problems that initially led to Tiffany being removed from her care. You know, remember, she wasn't consistently following the case plan, and the home environment wasn't deemed suitable for Tiffany's return.
Yeah, right. So that makes sense. And then what was the third point?
The third point, and I think this was perhaps the most compelling for the Supreme Court, was the evidence that Mary hadn't consistently provided for Tiffany, you know, financially or materially. And perhaps even more importantly, she hadn't maintained regular and meaningful contact with her daughter. It wasn't just about money, it was about that active, consistent presence in Tiffany's life.
Right, the emotional support, the bonding, all that. And it sounds like the inconsistent visits really played a big role in the court's decision.
Yeah, they did. The Supreme Court specifically pointed out that Mary's attempts to visit Tiffany were really sporadic. They mentioned that there was a 4-month period while Mary was living in Missouri where she had no contact with Tiffany at all.
Wow, 4 months, that's a long time.
It is, especially when you're talking about a young child.
Mm-hmm.
And even after Mary came back to the area, her visits eventually stopped altogether after May 21st, 1991. This was right before DHS filed the petition to terminate her rights.
It's almost like she gave up. So did DHS try to make it easier for Mary to visit Tiffany?
They did, and this is really crucial. The record showed that DHS had offered to arrange visits at their offices. You know, they were trying to accommodate Mary. They were addressing her concerns about transportation.
Oh, so it wasn't just a matter of her not being able to get to Tiffany. She just wasn't taking advantage of the opportunities that were being provided.
Right. And that's what led the Supreme Court to use a pretty strong phrase to describe Mary's behavior. They actually quoted a previous case, Bush v. Dietz, and they said that Mary's actions demonstrated studied indifference towards her daughter.
Studied indifference. I mean, that's pretty damning, isn't it? It suggests that she wasn't just struggling, she was actively choosing not to engage.
Yeah, it does. And it's a concept that pops up a lot in family law. When courts are trying to figure out if a parent is truly committed to their child, they're looking beyond just words and stated intentions. They're looking at actions, at that consistent effort to maintain the relationship.
Makes sense. So let's talk about the law itself. You mentioned earlier that Arkansas Code Section 927341 deals with termination of parental rights. How did the Supreme Court apply that specific law to the facts of this case?
Right. So this statute, it lays out the specific grounds for terminating parental rights in Arkansas. And there are actually two main parts to it that are relevant here. The first part allows for termination if a child has been out of the home for a year or more, and the parent hasn't fixed the problems that led to the removal.
It's like in Mary's case, not completing the case plan requirements and the continued issues with her home environment.
Exactly. But there's a second part to the law that was even more important in Anderson v. Douglas. It says that parental rights can be terminated if a child has been out of the home for a year or more, and the parent has intentionally failed to support the child or maintain meaningful contact.
So that directly addressed Mary's inconsistent visits and the lack of consistent support.
Exactly. And the Supreme Court, they looked at the evidence and said, yep, both of those grounds for termination, they're clearly met in this case.
Okay, so that covers the first issue on appeal, whether the lower court got it right. What about the second issue, the constitutional challenge?
Yeah.
What did the Supreme Court say about Mary's argument that the law itself was unconstitutional?
So this is where things get interesting from a procedural standpoint. The Supreme Court actually refused to consider Mary's constitutional argument. And the reason they gave was that Mary hadn't raised this specific argument in the lower court, you know, during the original trial in the Chancery Court.
Wait, so she couldn't bring it up on appeal?
Right. There's a fundamental principle in appellate law that says you can't generally bring up brand new legal arguments for the first time on appeal. You have to give the trial court a chance to consider those arguments first.
Oh, so it's like you snooze, you lose.
Kind of. It's about fairness and efficiency. The appellate court's job is primarily to review the decisions of the trial court based on the arguments and evidence that were presented there. If you spring a new argument on appeal, the other side hasn't had a chance to respond, and the trial court hasn't had a chance to rule on it.
That makes sense. So Mary's constitutional challenge, it was essentially waived because she didn't raise it in the lower court.
Exactly. And the Supreme Court, they also emphasize that appellate courts, they usually give a lot of deference to the trial judge's findings of fact. You know, they're not going to second guess every little detail. They'll only overturn a trial court's factual findings if they're convinced, like really convinced, that a mistake was made. And in Anderson v. Douglas, they didn't see that. They didn't think the Chancery Court's findings were clearly wrong.
So big picture.
Yeah.
What are the key takeaways from this case? I mean, what should we be thinking about as we sort of, you know, step back from the specifics?
Okay, so there are a few really big things to consider. First, this case really highlights the high burden of proof required to terminate parental rights in Arkansas. That clear and convincing evidence standard is a tough one to meet.
Right. It's not enough to just show that it's probably in the child's best interest to be removed. You have to be much more certain.
Exactly. And that's because terminating parental rights, it's a huge deal. It's a permanent decision that cuts off a fundamental legal relationship.
So high burden of proof, that's number one. What else?
Second, this case really underscores how crucial it is for parents to fully engage with the DHS case plan. You know, attend those counseling sessions, take those parenting classes, and most importantly, maintain that consistent and meaningful contact with their child. Mary's lack of engagement, her inconsistent visits, those were big factors in the court's decision.
Yeah, the court really emphasized that. So engage with the process, do what's asked of you, and maintain that relationship with your child. What else?
The third takeaway, and this is more procedural, but it's so important, is that if you want to challenge the constitutionality of a law, you have to do it at the trial court level. Don't wait until appeal, or you might lose your chance.
Right. Preserve those arguments. Okay, so high burden of proof, engage with the process, preserve your arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
Yeah, I think this case also brings up some really important policy considerations. You know, how do we balance the rights of parents with the need to protect children? It's not always easy.
No, it's not. And this case really shows that while the courts do take parental rights seriously, they're also going to prioritize the child's well-being, especially when there's evidence of neglect or indifference.
Right. The court's use of the phrase studied indifference to describe Mary's actions, that really speaks volumes. It suggests that there is a point where a parent's lack of effort can outweigh their fundamental rights. And it raises some tough questions about what constitutes enough when it comes to parental involvement.
Yeah, that's a really, really complex issue. And for those who are interested in, you know, maybe becoming lawyers or those who just enjoy the kind of inside baseball of legal proceedings, what's a key takeaway about how cases like this are actually built and decided?
Well, one thing that stands out from Anderson v. Douglas is the importance of documentation. Mary's inconsistent engagement with Tiffany, the fact that she wasn't taking advantage of the visit opportunities that DHS was offering, all of that was documented. And that documentation was crucial for the court.
Yeah, it painted a clear picture of what was really going on. So document everything. That's another big lesson.
Absolutely. Whether you're DHS or the parent's attorney, you need to have a clear record of what happened, what was said, what efforts were made, what was refused. That's how you build a strong case.
Okay, so to kind of wrap things up, it's clear that Anderson v. Douglas is a really powerful example of how the legal system handles these incredibly difficult cases where parental rights are at stake. It shows us the high burden of proof required, the importance of following proper procedures, and the really complex ethical considerations that come into play.
It does, and I think it leaves us with some really challenging questions. Given the emphasis on studied indifference in this case, what are the responsibilities of both the parent and the state in maintaining that parent-child relationship? And how do we ensure that the legal system is protecting children without unfairly punishing parents who may be struggling, you know, who may need help but aren't intentionally harming their child?
Yeah, those are the tough questions that, you know, lawyers, judges, social workers, everyone involved in these cases has to wrestle with. It's about finding that delicate balance between protecting rights and ensuring that children are safe and cared for.
And that's a conversation that goes beyond a courtroom. It's a conversation that we all need to be having as a society.
Absolutely. All right, that's going to do it for this deep dive. Thanks for joining us, everyone.
Thanks for having me.